Today we begin our summer blockbuster sermon series 2, the sequel, in the tradition of bad sequel titles. We did this last year for several weeks in August. We're going to do it this year for several weeks in August. Talk about contemporary, there's that word again, current summer films and some of the spiritual themes that are embedded within them. We go to the movies all the time, and sometimes we don't notice those spiritual themes. This week we have a comedy, Grown Ups. Poll, how many people have seen Grown Ups? So about a quarter of us, or 20% of us or so, okay. Comedy starring, let's see, Adam Sandler, Kevin James, Chris Rock, David Spade, Rob Schneider, Salma Hayek, Maya Rudolph, etc., etc. Huge cast. Huge comedy. The premise is that the five guys, Adam Sandler and Chris Rock and Kevin James, Rob Schneider and David Spade, were all friends together in the same New England town. They played on the same 12-year-old basketball team that won the city championship. And they reunite for the funeral of the coach of that team. Some of them haven't seen each other in years, though it's obvious that they have maintained within themselves some level of friendship for all of those years. But now it's not just the five of them. As happens when you grow up, they come with people who are also important in their lives. They come with girlfriends and wives. They come with sons and daughters, some close, some with some problems. Sound familiar? Yeah. And Adam Sandler, whose character's name is Lenny, I had to write down all the character names because I can't remember them. There's too many of them. Lenny looks out. He's rented a cabin for all five families to stay at, the basis of the comedy. And he looks out and he sees all the kids on their iPods and their iPhones and their Sony game systems, and not outside by the beautiful lake or in the water or just spending time with each other. And he says, this is wrong. This isn't what we did when we were kids. We went out, we didn't need a Game Boy. We didn't need cell phone. We had the whole outdoors. We'd go out. There's this beautiful lake. We used to swim in it every day. So he takes away all the electronics and makes them go outside. Says the only rule is they can't have the electronics and they have to be outside. Sound familiar with your kids? And then the next day, the five men go to spread the ashes of their coach on an island in the middle of that lake. And they reconnect. And they talk about things that they miss from when they were together. They talk about how some of the things that were good when they were 12, they don't do anymore. Does that sound familiar? They become nostalgic, is the word we usually say. They look at their lives as they're living it right now, and they feel stressed out and out of touch with people they care about. They feel like their children may not be quite what they had hoped for, and worry that maybe it's partially their fault as parents. They worry that the priorities in their own lives, with their jobs and with their spouses, have been wrong. And they think back to that quote-unquote simpler time when they were 12. They think about how happy they were just to be together, to do things with each other, to be there for each other. Nostalgia is a powerful thing in all of our lives. It's a powerful thing in the scriptures too. Several tales in the Bible where the histories, the historians, or the prophets look back and say, look how good it was and how bad it's become. A slightly different nostalgic tale from the scriptures today, though, the tale of King Josiah. Oh yes, the Hebrew kings, they're back. One Sunday only. King Josiah, whose reputation in the history of Israel is that he was the great reformer. You see, because his father and his grandfather had become cosmopolitan-style kings, they had allowed the worship of other gods to happen in the land. They had gone so far in their tolerance toward other religions that even false idols had been brought into the temple in Jerusalem. And altars to these false gods had been raised on the mountaintops all over the kingdom. And Josiah's father and his grandfather had thought this was a good, progressive thing. And Josiah, even though he was young, he's 8 when he becomes king, and he's 16 when he kind of takes control as king, says this is not good at all. And in fact, he follows the example of his great-grandfather, Hezekiah, who had said, there is no place in my kingdom for these false gods and the priests to these false gods. And systematically, he himself leads the destruction of all the altars, all the idols, and the expulsion of all the false priests. According to the scriptures, it takes him 8 years. 8 years. But he's not finished then. Then he takes money out of the court treasury and he says, now that we've torn things down, we have to build things up. And he gave contractors, the ones I listed in the last verse, money to restore and make grand again the temple in Jerusalem. I didn't read on, because then there's a lot more names before we get to the punchline of this story. Those workers, while they're going around the temple, they come across an old book, the equivalent of an old book in those days, an old scroll. And they say, look, it's the law. We know that book by its scriptural name, Deuteronomy, which if you know your Greek or even your Latin, Deutero means second, nomos means law. The second telling of the law. It's a retelling of the book of Exodus. But if you've ever compared Deuteronomy and Exodus, and I know you all have, because that's what you spend your free time doing, putting Exodus to one side and Deuteronomy and marking down the similarities and the differences. If you've ever done that, though, you'll find out that while Deuteronomy is mostly the same as Exodus, we get the Ten Commandments again, for example, there are some things that are different. Some of the laws, particularly some of those weird laws, just don't get mentioned. And then towards the end of the book, there's a great verse that summarizes the whole law in one verse. It's such a good summary, Jesus himself uses it. Believe in the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus didn't say that first. It's first written in the book of Deuteronomy. It's the summation of all of the law, it says. This should not surprise us if we're honest about how nostalgia works. We look back at what was good, and we say, you know, I like a lot of those things. But if you're like me, you may like a lot of those things, but you're not giving up this in order to get those things back. You may like an easier time when the doctor made house calls, but I guarantee you, if you need your hip replaced, you'd like the new titanium version that they've created in the last few. Right? You love being able to sit out on your porch next to your neighbors and walk around town and greet with each other, but you also love being able to get into your air-conditioned automatic transmission vehicle and being able to drive as far as you want. Right? Let's be honest. When we're nostalgic, we want to have our cake and eat it too. We want the best of both worlds, the best of now and of the past, and so it has always been. Funny story. Best example of this from a show I love, Sports Night. Some of you have heard me refer to Sports Night before. It's an ESPN-style Sports Center program, comedy show. They get a write-in email from one of the viewers. Who do you think would win in a game between the 1927 Yankees and the 1997 Yankees? Fighting words if you're Yankees fans. Hope you're not. If you are, hope you don't. You know, I'm just retelling the story. I'm not. 27, 97. common sports thing, you know, which team was better? I love the answer in the show. We don't know, but we think the guys from the 1927 Yankees would be so confused by the giant airplanes flying overhead, they wouldn't pay attention to the game. True. Yankee Stadium was not in an air lane then like it is now. We tend to forget those things when we think nostalgically. We see everything through those rose-colored glasses, and we see very green pastures and say, I'd like to be there. But if we start moving back that way too far, we clutch our cell phone and our car and the salary we're making now as opposed to what we made then. That's all right. Because guess what? That's how God intended it to be. At least, well, I don't know if God intended it to be that way from the beginning when creation was perfect, but it's how God intended it to be after sin entered the world and there came to be shortcomings in our lives, came to be things that we didn't want. You know, those bad things have a way of just creeping in, don't they? A little petty argument with the neighbor, and suddenly you're not speaking. Your wife or your husband burns dinner, and one of you says a nasty little comment about it, and suddenly they don't want to cook anymore. You don't like my cooking? You cook! We come to church, we hear a sermon we don't like, we hear a song we don't like, we hear the pastor preaching out of weird books that we didn't even think were in the Bible. We think a little less of him or her. Or, we've gone through a hard time, and we've desperately wanted our boyfriend, girlfriend, son, daughter, mother, father, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, pastor, neighbor, close friend, best friend, friend we haven't seen through college. We wanted them to call, and they didn't. We didn't tell them we wanted them to call, but we just desperately wanted them to call. They didn't, and we feel that there's a problem with the relationship. There's a barrier there. Those are the little ways it can work in. And then there are just the kind of mean things that we do to each other. And then the not just kind of mean things, the really mean things, the backstabbing things that we do to each other. God did not intend those things. But, God is the best at taking lemons and making lemonade. And that's what nostalgia is. It's looking at our present life and saying, you know what? I'm out of sorts. This is not what I thought I'd be when I was 12, and I don't like it. This is not what I thought I'd be when I was 30, and I don't like it. And it's not an easy fix to reorient those priorities, but we need to. And so we start looking at the past and we say, when was I happier? When were my relationships better? Including, when was my relationship with God better? We start looking back, and we try to imagine how we can go back there. The secret, of course, is not trying to go back there, though. It's to figure out what it was that made those things special then, and bringing them forward to today. Looking at our lives and saying, you know what? I've been putting too much priority behind some of the wrong things. Every time that BlackBerry buzzes, I answer it. And maybe sometimes I need to leave it on the desk for a couple hours. Every time my son or daughter wants to go outside and play, I just wish they'd leave me alone and go watch TV so I can get my work done. How many of you have thought that? I wish Mom and Dad would stop nagging me. So much so that you just stop answering the phone when they call. At least sometimes. Because you just can't take it at that time. can we make that better? How can we restore what was good in the present day? Believe it or not, that's what the story of Josiah is all about. Looking back to the past and saying, look, God gave us these laws, and we went astray from them. And we came back, and then we went further astray from them, but now we're going to come back bigger and better, more faithful than ever. We're going to get our priorities straight. I'm the king. I'm going to make it so. Well, you and I are not Josiah. But we are like Lenny in the story Grown-Ups. We can make some things in our immediate lives better. We can have control over what's in our immediate lives. And if we say, this is out of balance, we can take action to put it into better balance. And if you don't know what to do, let me give you a few things that I think come out of Grown-Ups and throughout the Scriptures that you can do to help get your life in better balance. Number one, it's a sermon after all. Pray. Take time every day to be with God. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Take time. Take the telephone and put it in another room where you can't hear it ring. Leave the room where your computer and your television and your radio is. Tell your husband or your wife, I need 10 minutes. Or do what I did when I was growing up in a big family and a small house, and that I still do even though I live by myself. Go in the bathroom and shut the door and take a 10-minute shower and pray. Usually they won't bother you in there. Usually. And do it every day. Just find out that little space to be with God. And when you're with God, don't just do all the talking. Listen, too. Before Josiah said, I'm the king and this is the way it's going to be, I guarantee you, he listened to God. Because trust me, his advisors weren't telling him this. They were telling him what they told his daddy and his granddaddy. Let it be. Things are going good. Everybody's happy. Don't rock the boat. Number two, take some space. Take a day off once in a while, or an afternoon off, from everything, not just from your job, but from your stress. Give yourself permission to not let it be a problem for a little while. Jesus himself, in the midst of a very stressful ministry, more stressful than your life and mine, would take time to go to a mountaintop by himself and pray and invite the disciples to come join him. And they'd eat together. They'd relax together. They'd look at the stars together. My hunch is they'd talk about old times together like you and I do when we get with our old friends and have a little bit of time and space to do so. They told old stories and jokes. Oh, remember when Peter did. There are a lot of remember when Peter did stories. Take some time. In the movie, they all go to a water park. Hard to take your BlackBerry with you or your iPhone down a water slide. Things won't work very well if you try it. In fact, put on a bathing suit, I know. But put on a bathing suit, one of the great things about a bathing suit, you can't carry very much in a bathing suit. Can you? All that stuff we lug around with us from place to place, we gotta leave it. Just for a while. And when you take that time and space, take some people you love with you. And enjoy it with them. And just be together with each other. Strengthen your relationships with each other. Just like when you've prayed, you've been strengthening your relationship with God. And last, and hardest, when you feel and see something in your life that's out of balance, and you know it's out of balance. Rock the boat. Make a change. Now, don't become schizophrenic about it. Don't make changes every day, every week. You'll drive yourself nuts. You'll drive everyone around you nuts. And you won't be any happier or any less stressed out. Remember, it took Josiah almost 20 years to work through all the changes he needed to make in his kingdom. Now, our kingdoms are a little smaller than Josiah's, so I don't think it's going to take you or I 20 years to make the changes we want to make. But it will take us some time. And we will confuse some people and frustrate some people. Why are you doing that? I don't understand. Why did you turn off the TV to open up a book? We've not done that in 20 years. We're not in college. But if it's what you need, do it. And try to be honest with the people around you why you're doing it. And trust their generosity and their love for you to at least tolerate it. And if you're right, and if the changes you make are the right ones, you know what's going to happen to all those people who are worried about you rocking the boat? They're going to see a change in you. And they're going to know that was the right change. So you can do this in all your phases of life. You can do it at work. You can do it with your families. And it is church. You can most definitely do it with your relationship with God. So feel free. Get nostalgic. Look back in your past. Look at your youth and say, I miss certain things. And then try and figure out how you can reclaim them and enjoy them again. God sometimes gives us, does not. God realizes that sometimes our lives have become things we don't want them to be. In fact, sometimes we've gone through some pretty hard stuff. I don't want to leave before I bring up this point. This is really important. Sometimes we go through some really hard stuff. And I'm convinced that God does not intend us to go through those difficult times. That's not what He wants for us. He's not a mean God. But because God turns lemons into lemonade, He takes those hard times and He helps us grow in them. So just as you can look back and learn from things that were great in the past, you can look back and look at things that were really hard in the past, really bad in the past, and God is going to make you learn from those and change from those and grow from those too. He's going to allow you to build on those times just as He allows you to build on the happy times, the rainbow times, the green pasture, better days times. So don't be afraid of those times either, because we've all got them. This sermon is not about avoiding those times, but with God's help, better incorporating them as well into our lives. Glad I didn't say amen before I said that part, because that's really important. So do it. Look back. Be nostalgic. The good times and the bad. Take what you can learn from them. Bring it up to today and tomorrow. And change your life. And if it's hard, ask for some help. And if it's really hard, ask for God's help. Amen. Amen.